It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub, coming in from the Town Fair Tire Studio. You know, so we have TVs on in here where we're normally watching replays of the prior night sporting events. Obviously not really anything going on right now. Bundesliga, German football, that's soccer to you and I, coming soon, so we'll have that. Korean baseball, we have that. And I look up here. They're playing cornhole. Is this actually happening? It must be because the participants wearing masks.
Oh, they're wearing masks. You're right. Remember when
cornhole continues.
Remember when I texted you about this that time?
Yeah.
I was like, you have to watch this. This is the greatest thing.
It's actually kind of fascinating television. If you've never watched this before, now there's no better time to watch it because, you know, what the hell else is going on? But, oh, yeah, the participants in this thing. Oh, look at this.
Yeah, they have the gloves. This is happening.
They got the dishwashing gloves on. They're sanitizing the bags and the cornhole boards.
Wow.
Oh, this is wild. Obviously, no fans in attendance.
Is this the professional league or the college league?
This looks like the professional league because they got the sponsorship from Johnsonville Sausage.
They do.
But I'll tell you, if you've never watched this before, it's wild in terms of you know what the participants look like because you know you don't really need much athletic talent.
If you just want to show up in a pair of like construction boots and do a participate in a professional sports league, this is the sport for you.
All right, I digress. Here on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, we haven't talked to him in quite some time. Chris Forsberg covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. Chris, first and foremost, hello and how are you and your family doing?
What's going on? But now I'm totally distracted because I'm trying to load this cornhole on my TV.
It's on ESPN.
Yeah, ESPN.
It's actually kind of funny.
I can't wait. And I do take offense as someone who takes cornhole way too seriously in the summer months when friends are over. It takes an epic amount of athletic ability. Yeah. At least that's what I think.
Well, it takes an epic amount of skill. I don't know about athletic ability.
No, not at all. No, there's no skill whatsoever based on the people that win the cornhole tournament at the Forsberg household most years.
Nerves and booze. That's all you need. It's like darts. You just got to have a steady hand, nerves, and some booze.
But before we get to the important basketball questions, I have one thing I've been dying to know, Forsberg. You have a rather intricate hairstyle.
Oh, yeah.
How are you keeping that up with all of the barbershops closed during the pandemic?
I've resorted to wearing headbands at home because the faux hawk is just falling over and it's quite a mess. I've had barbers that I didn't even know if they knew who I was reaching out to say how desperately they need to reopen so that they can make me look presentable. And if that's the worst of this situation for me, I can deal with it. But I do appreciate you looking out. It's been rough times for the haircut.
But outside of the do, you and yours all good?
Well, we just got a new puppy,
so
that's added a little chaos to the Forsberg household. But I keep saying this to people, and I know we all sort of sit here and it's kind of a weird time. But like selfishly, to be home and around my family for essentially 60 straight dinners, I don't know if I've ever done that since. I honestly never, and it's just like I try to find the positives in it. And so it's you just try to make the most of it. And it's been really cool to – I've never been more productive in getting stuff done around the house and all that. And so, you know, I want everyone to be healthy and safe. And for those affected by this, I feel terrible. But, you know, for sometimes when I see people complaining about being cooped up, I'm like, you know, it could be a lot worse.
Yeah. So, see, that's the good in this, Chris. The good in this.
Yeah. You know our friend Kevin Begley, Chris, down in doing radio in Connecticut. He does a segment every day, The Good in This, which drives me crazy because I'm just, you know me, I'm a negative prick. I can't help it. But as cities are starting to open up, as are gyms, you know, in the NBA. So you had some shoot-arounds taking place yesterday. I saw a comment from Kevin Love with the Cavs saying, like, you know, it's weird, but it was, you know, it was nice to get a little bit of the routine back. Obviously, the Celtics, it hinges on whether or not the state will open up soon, but... did you hear anything from any of the shoot-arounds yesterday, what the vibe is from the Celtics players that you talked to? I know you're involved with the Enes Kanter podcast. Like, from talking to some of these guys, what's the overall vibe and whether or not they feel like they're actually going to come back?
Yeah, so I actually asked Enes that the other day because I was curious if he thought there was, like, even just a competitive disadvantage, right, because guys are able to get back in there while the Celtics sort of have to wait while the Massachusetts stay-at-home order is still in place. And, you know, ultimately what it comes down to is that teams are opening back up, not because they want to kind of like get a jump start, but just because there are guys out there that are going to their local college gym or an Equinox, and teams are just really worried they're putting themselves in dangerous situations. So if you can take some of the risk out of it and have guys under your hood and working on, you know, just in a more safe environment, that puts people at ease. But then you look at the 14 pages of rules that they have to follow just to, like, do basic shooting drills. And it's a lot of work just to get Kevin Love into a rural Ohio gym to be safe. And so Enes did say that if Boston, once that stay-at-home order lifts, he will think about coming back. I think Brad Stevens and the whole Celtics organization have been especially diligent here in making sure their players are safe. And I don't think they'll be in any sort of rush to accelerate that process. They'll do this at the right pace. But certainly, you know, I just think it's a minor step. As much as I started this call very optimistic about, you know, like, the situation we're in, I am pessimistic about the chances of basketball resuming. I just think there's a lot of hurdles to go through to get there. And yet, you know, like, look, the NBA's got a lot of smart people. I hope they can figure it out.
Chris, there's been sort of a couple of ideas bandied about basically having a basketball bubble in Las Vegas or Orlando. What's your sense from players you've spoken to about their willingness to do so? It seems like there's some pushback there.
Yeah, so I think there's a split, right? Like, if you're, and not to keep using Enes as an example, but he's a single guy, doesn't have a family, sort of a, you know, doesn't even really have a home. He's living in with one of his managers out there in Chicago right now. You know, for him to be isolated in a bubble is one thing. It's, you know, probably an ideal situation, and you can get back to basketball, and it's probably okay. But for people that have to leave their families, and for, you know, anyone that's just worried about the risk of bringing all these people together, it's a little bit more, you know, not as optimistic or not as entertaining. And so I do wonder what the sort of pushback will be. I think there'll be a little bit of a split. I think, again, most people want to get back to basketball. I think the players are eager to see a finality to the season. And yet I do think, you know, safety has to come first. And I just don't know, like, what happens the first time a player comes down with coronavirus, and all of a sudden, even in a bubble situation, I don't know, like, how they navigate that and make it safe for everyone. That's just, again, that's just part of the reason why it's hard for me to see how they make this all happen. And yet, you know, maybe if testing becomes more readily available, you know, maybe there's a way to do it and keep everyone safe. But certainly there's just so many hurdles to get to that idea. And, you know, the ideas of Las Vegas and Orlando and, you know, I mean, selfishly, I sit there and say, well, where does the media come into this? It's hard for me to envision a scenario where many of us are allowed in, where, you know, just because of the strict number of personnel they're going to need. So it's going to be very, very weird and very strange. And yet, you know, as I sit here watching cornhole, I say, well, if they can figure out a way to do it, we'll all make it work just to have sports back in our routine.
Let me follow it up by asking you this. In your mind, do you think there's any other way Adam Silver's willing to resume the NBA season than this bubble idea? It seems like, reading between the lines, he's not in favor of really resuming play and concluding this season with each team playing at its individual arena and teams traveling back and forth.
I mean, I think if they could find a way that testing would allow it, that where they felt confident that they could travel these teams into the different cities and be comfortable that every player is safe and they would consider it. But it just feels like that adds so many variables to the process, just the travel part of it. And, you know, the people you encounter on planes. And I just, I that's why it's hard for me to envision that, that something outside of a bubble scenario would work. You know, I've said this too, you know, at what point do you just, as much as we want to see finality to this season, do you try to just get yourself in position where at least everything next season could be a little bit more in line, where we've just, as we go through this, I sit there and I'm jealous of the football guys, Gasper, because I like, they've got free agency, they've got the draft. You know, I'd hate to see the NBA keep pushing this thing out and out and out, trying on the hope of getting this completed. And then all of a sudden you're scrambling to get your draft in, you're scrambling to get free agency just so you're in position to launch in whatever it would be, October, November, January. So it's a delicate tightrope they're walking here in terms of what they think is feasible. I'll be fascinated to see like how long they're willing to wait. Are they able to go into June before they make a firm decision here on whether they can finish this thing off?
Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston, covering the Celtics, joins us here on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. So, Chris, going back about, well, now a month now, at the time there was an interview with Jason Tatum where he said, you know, he didn't even have a net to shoot on, which I was one of these people like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Like, I get it. You can't go to the gym. You can't do your normal workouts, but you're not even shooting hoops. Like, come on. So when you heard that, or even talking to some of the other players, whether it's Enes Kanter or others, has that changed? Like, is he at least trying to practice his craft a little bit, I hope, and some of these other guys? Are they keeping up with their that kind of working out?
Yeah, last I heard, he had a hoop now. So he's out there at least getting jumpers up on days where it's not snowing on May mornings. He's able to get out there and get some work. You know, at first I felt the same way. I was like, wow, like, why aren't these guys more proactively trying to get out there and be active? And I thought it was funny because even Danny Ainge sort of came out in the aftermath and said, like, you know, roasted him on Twitter, getting shots up in his own driveway and saying, hey, we've got player development days open if Jason wants to come over here and use the hoop. That being said, when I asked around the, you know, among team brass and some of the people around the team if they were concerned that Jason Tatum hadn't picked up a basketball, the general sense I got was that they didn't think it was a big deal. They didn't think he was going to, like, lose the ability to be an elite NBA player just because he hadn't shot a basketball in 30 days. But certainly you got, you know, Brad Stevens, the one thing he has preached is that he wants these guys to be a week away from your best shape, just because if this thing does somehow get accelerated back on a path to being returned to play, that they don't want their guys scrambling to catch up and being out of shape. And so, listen, they've all got bikes, they've all got weights, they're all doing that sort of stuff. But the way Jason Tatum was playing before the break, I think you just want to see him doing everything possible to harness whatever he had found at that point, so that whenever this thing does resume, whether it's this year or next, that he's ready to hit the ground running.
Chris, have the Celtics and Danny Ainge, Mike Zarin, have they sort of done any advanced planning on, you know, what this offseason is like and how coronavirus could affect them? In other words, you know, Gordon Hayward having that option, it would seem like he'd be more likely to pick that up at $34 million. How does it work with the draft if the season's not completed? You know, Memphis was in the playoffs, so that pick would not be in the lottery. What have you heard on that front?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is the salary cap is just what will the impact be and how does that alter your future planning? And really just I don't think anyone has a real firm understanding of how it will be, will ultimately shake down because of this. The loss of money from arenas, and, you know, again, if they don't get back out there, the even more dire situation in terms of how it'll affect the cap. I don't get the sense it'll affect anything the Celtics do necessarily in the big picture. Like, you know, my assumption has always been that Gordon Hayward will be back, and they'll sort of figure that out, because there wasn't, even in a ideal situation, there wasn't going to be a lot of teams with money that would have the ability that would interest him out there. Just not a lot of situations that you would say, let's leave $30 million a year to go pursue. You know, so that's something they'll still have to kind of long-term view. Do they want Gordon Hayward a part of that future? And that's a decision they have to make. But I do think he'll be back next year. And you know, draft-wise, like, you know, it's weird. You know, they're probably doing these more virtual interviews with these prospects and just trying to get ready. But, you know, the Celtics are always very diligent about that. Whenever the draft rolls around, they'll be ready to go and add that. Certainly it's unique because they've got the three first-round picks with that Memphis pick likely, you know, depending on how this all plays out, almost certainly going to convey, even if they do resume here and they somehow don't make the playoffs, it would be still a slim chance that that wouldn't convey. But I think, you know, they're pretty among the better teams in the league at being prepared for the uncertainty, and they'll be ready to sort of navigate that path regardless of how this all plays out.
All right, Chris, thanks for taking the time. It's good to catch up with you, buddy. I know it's been a couple of months without hoops now, and it's been weird not doing the Sports Hub Celtics show and talking to you, and, you know, it's a weird time. In fact, do you know what a year ago yesterday was?
What was a year ago yesterday?
When they got eliminated by Milwaukee.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's crazy. That is crazy. Hey, Gasper, by the way, congratulations.
Thank you, Forsby. I appreciate it.
Welcome to the TV side of the world.
Yes, yes. I have a lot to learn. Hopefully I can be as good as you. I'm also having my own hair struggles, so I feel your pain.
Wait till you see this terrible, terrible beard I'm trying to grow. Once puberty hits, I'll be able to have a full head of hair and a full beard. But until then, I am stuck in limbo land.
But the good news is, you know, your golf is back.
So some of us might have been sneaking to Connecticut to play.
Cagey, good for you.
I know a handful of people doing that too. Good for you. All right, Chris, be well. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Right back at you guys. Thank you for having
Bye,
me.
Forsby.
All right, take care. Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston, covers the Celtics. If you're not following on Twitter, do that. And go enjoy the cornhole on ESPN like he is, and we are here in the studio as well. As we're talking hoops, Chris Gasper has finally got caught up with The Last Dance, the story of Michael Jordan and the Bulls and their last title run, late 90s. I want to get to that coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
You will listen. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. So I wanted to touch on this quick because I brought it up last week. And Chris was like, oh, I haven't watched it yet. I've been watching my shows on Bravo. I haven't had time to get to The Last Dance yet, Jim. Like, all right, fine. But Chris has finally caught up to The Last Dance. He's watched the first 6 episodes. So your thoughts on it so far? Do you think it's just because we've talked about it extensively on Felger and Maz too? Yeah. I think it's a bit gratuitous. I like it, and I don't have any problems with everyone tweeting about it at the same time on Sunday nights because it's, you know, for sports fans or those star for entertainment, which I think is all of us. It's the one thing that we can all kind of collectively get together with at the same time on social media and be like, oh my God, this is cool, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I have no issues with that, and I get it. Like, some people just like, ah, rubble, rubble. It's too much. Is it gratuitous at times? Yes. Is it a puff piece at times? Yes, because it's, you know, Michael Jordan got final say on the final cut of it. So I just think my biggest takeaway so far through 6 episodes, and I have enjoyed it overall, Chris, is it's to tell a younger generation, those 35 and under, you idiots who think LeBron James is the best player to ever play in the NBA, no, it's me, you fools. Like, and this is a reminder, I'm the best. I'm the best, not LeBron. So it's the competitive streak that exists inside Michael Jordan, who's a maniac when it comes to that his competitiveness. It's just further proof of that. This thing exists to show everyone else, I'm the best, you know, and those
that's a good point
that didn't live through it and didn't get it. That to me is the biggest takeaway from this thing through 6 episodes.
I mean, I'm enjoying it immensely as a basketball fan. I love to go back and be able to see some of those shots, some of those clips. I feel like I was fortunate to be alive when he was playing and to be able to appreciate how great he was. And I do sort of enjoy some of the behind the scenes stories, and I've consumed it pretty rapidly. So I'm obviously enjoying it. The biggest takeaway for me though, is something that kind of annoys me. He is completely incapable of admitting any fault in any way, even now, whether it's about how he treated Jerry Krause. The one that really got me was when they asked him about the Republicans Buy Sneakers Too thing and Harvey Gantt running against Jesse Helms, probably one of the most racist politicians in the history of this country.
Openly.
I mean, openly. This is a man who, when he beat Harvey Gantt, opened his victory speech by saying, there's no joy in Mudville tonight. It's like stunning. And Michael Jordan somehow turned himself into the victim of that whole Republicans Buy Sneakers Too thing and couldn't admit, he just couldn't even say, you know, look, I didn't realize the seriousness of it at the time, or looking back and thinking about racial equality and social justice, I wish I'd done a little bit more, but that wasn't who I was at the time. Instead, he turned it into a thing where he's being victimized. He said, well, no matter what I did, people would have complained and, you know, it made me not want to be a role model and all this other stuff. And so I look at that and I'm like, he can't admit he's wrong on anything. On anything. Like, yeah. I can't think of a single thing. Maybe this will change with the baseball thing. And he'll be like, look, I just wasn't good enough. You know, I shouldn't have done it, whatever. But I've just realized, just watching this, as great as he is, as great as he is as a basketball player, I've always said this. I think one of the greatest character flaws you can have is not being able to admit when you're wrong. And I feel like he can't admit, he can't bring himself to say, I was wrong, I did this wrong, I was incorrect.
Yeah, he's a very icy human being, you know, and I think that, for better or worse, led to, you know, the way that he was on the court, you know, like he was a joy to watch. And it's still, I get, you know, tingly, like watching some of these highlights, some of these games. And I forgot really how awesome that 93 finals was against the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
And how they were actually pushed, you know, still they never got to a game seven, but you know, you had that triple overtime game, yeah. Even the game that they won, the game six in Phoenix, you know, that wasn't a decided until seconds left. And it was Paxton hit the three to ice it. But, yeah. Like, that was a good series. And Barkley was the balls that year. And he was the deserved MVP. And Jordan still, again, bitter that he didn't win the MVP award then. So for all
I did like this. So speaking of Jordan's pettiness, and sorry to interrupt you, when he said Jerry Krause really liked Dan Majerle and thought he was a good defender. So I had to, like, basically dismantle Dan Majerle. I did enjoy that.
So I did, too. But just going back to what you were saying, like, I'm trying to rack my brain too. I'm like, but didn't he have any kind of mea culpas in this thing so far? And no, he didn't. Like, there's not one. There's no admissions to any mistakes he'd made in the past. It's just the way that it was, and that's how he lived his life. And he doesn't look back with any question marks on himself. Which I don't know if that's the correct way to live your life. But
no, I think that's a character. The closest he came, Jim, was when he wore the Jordan 1s at Madison Square Garden for his last game. And he was like, yeah, you know, my feet were all bloody. He's like, yeah, you know, he's basically like, oh, that probably wasn't a good idea. Like, that's the closest he's come to admitting any fault.
Yeah. Yeah, but Dan Majerle thing, he goes at him because, you know, the general manager once winked at him. He and Scottie Pippen make a fool out of Tony Kukoc in round one of the tournament in the Olympics in 92.
Yeah, in Barcelona.
I loved all that stuff, you know, and when Felger and Maz were talking about it earlier this week, Maz was like, no, I wasn't actually into that because it felt like, and he was like a bully. He was a bully. I like that. Like, that just shows, as a player,
yeah,
I loved the ruthlessness. As a human being, he's flawed.
Well, there was one, like, and I know it was in jest, but I was kind of like, eh. Like, when Randy Brown's trying to get the tickets, he's like, oh, I can't get the tickets, man. He's like, you couldn't get a ticket to this game from God himself. And Jordan hands him, he goes, you just did. You just did. And he's like, just kidding. But it's like, nah, you really. Or, like, when he's rushing Scottie Pippen out of the gym because he wants to get to the golf course. I mean, this is someone who I think lived a life where everything was built around him and everybody was at his beck and call.
Yeah, and I, you know, for the most part, and I think that the suspension was real, the conspiracy about the suspension, that's why he went to go play baseball. I think that he did ultimately get suspended because the gambling got out of control, and who knows whether or not that actually led to his father's untimely demise. Like, that whole story's crazy, and yeah. I hope not, too. Ultimately, though, like, I don't think that, you know, he's a bad guy because of the gambling, but I do think it's problematic. Like, I'm not going to stick my head in the sand about that. Like, I grew up around action fiends. He's an action fiend. He's a, like, I thought it was so telling. Maybe one of the most telling things of this documentary so far, yeah. Chris, was he's playing whatever that old-timey gambling game is with the quarters
that
they're throwing against the wall with the security dudes.
Yep.
Who you read about that guy with the funny hairdo who passed in January. Like, he was close with all those guys and treated them well.
Yeah.
But you could, after watching that, like, I grew up around that. My grandfather, after he retired, he worked at Suffolk Downs, and I'm using air quotes here, parking cars. It was just so he could be close to the action and gamble every day. Like, I know what that is. It goes through me. I have most of my tattoos on my right arm are a testament to my grandfather and his gambling because I'm like, it's an old reference, but there was a Flintstones episode from back in the day where Fred Flintstone becomes a gambling addict, and anytime he said bet, he'd go bet, 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 bet. Like, I know that. That's Michael Jordan. Like, that's a sickness. So while some look at that and he's playing that old-timey game, like, oh, Michael, he'll play anything. I was like, oh, wow, he really is. Like, that's problematic. If you half knew Michael Jordan, be like, hey, you want to go play some craps against the brick wall out back? He'd be in. He'd come the hundreds. Like, he will play anything.
Yeah.
And that can be, you know, I can understand. Like, that's problematic gambling. I've been around it. He's an action fiend. I know that.
I like I said, the basketball part of it I love, and I do love his ruthlessness. And the thing I always respected about him the most and loved about him was that he didn't want to just beat you. He wanted to rip your heart out and then show it to you.
Yeah.
You know, still beating. And I love that about him. And but the interesting thing that they delve into is sort of his brand, and it's just interesting to me how much sort of the mythology of Be Like Mike and all that other stuff was an act, and it wasn't real. It wasn't who he really was.
Not at all.
And in terms of the idea of not being able to take fault, that's the other thing with the Atlantic City thing. Instead of him being like, hey, you know what, maybe not the best idea. You know, I did it all the time. It was definitely overblown, but, you know, looking back on it, maybe during a playoff series, instead he's like, basically like, well, I was in bed by 12:30. They show the newspaper report that says he was at the casino at 2:30 a.m.
Yeah.
And then he trots out his dad as like a human shield. So this is what I mean. It's like, can you just be like, hey, you know, there's some things I do differently. Because I think we all have things in our lives we would do differently. Instead, he's like, nope, everything I did was correct. Anytime anybody attacked me, it was an issue, and it was their issue, not mine.
Yeah. Trumpian in a lot of ways, the way he carries himself.
I mean, it honestly is. I didn't want to say that, and I said that to you off the air.
But it's true.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is.
Yeah, no.
He can't admit that anything's his fault.
Everything I do is the right thing.
I will say this. I'm enjoying the heck out of this from a basketball standpoint. And maybe I'm embellishing here and I'm taking it too literally, but it is making Michael Jordan a less sympathetic figure in my eyes.
A bit, yeah, but he said it to his credit. We'll give him credit here. Going into this, he said, you know, people may like me less after watching this thing.
Yeah.
And so I think you're one of those
people.
Oh, I do. Yeah. One more thing quickly. I don't know if you felt this way in watching this. Oh, I was reminded, Chris, how much I hated those Knicks teams of the early to mid-90s. What a collection of hacks. Oh, I hated those teams. You wannabe late 80s Pistons without the talent. Off-brand Pistons. That's what those Knicks teams were. Oh, I hated them. And you know who might have been the worst of them all was John Starks, who was Marcus Smart before Marcus Smart. Fake tough guy, made the occasional big shot, fooled segments of their respective fan bases into thinking that he's better than he actually was.
Starks was better than Smart.
Oh, please. Look at the numbers. They're almost the same. Look them up right now. Starks,
really?
Starks' career numbers and Marcus Smart so far, it's like the same player, same
really?
Height, same guy. Those teams.
I think Starks was a better player.
Those teams were a joke. And so when people say, and Felger's one of these people, like the 90s basketball outside of the Bulls was unwatchable. You watch those Knicks teams from that era, I get it. Oh, God, did I hate those Knicks
teams. I mean, it was unwatchable. Look, I think the Pacers were very good. Here's what I'll say on that. I've never blamed the players on that Knicks team. I've always blamed Pat Riley because the same coach who presided over Showtime, arguably the most aesthetically pleasing basketball played in the history of the league, decided that he was going to go rough and tumble and turn it into a hack fest on purpose with that Knicks team. So I and then you know what was even worse? He goes to Miami, and initially the Heat became the off-brand Knicks.
They did, yeah.
It was even worse.
Further watered down.
Some of those Knicks Heat playoff series? Oh, my God.
Final, 79-77.
Completely I'd rather watch this cornhole than some of those playoff series. Those games were so bad.
Yeah, so reminded about some real bad basketball then. And
Pat Riley trying to ruin the NBA for his own purposes. Ugh.
The soundtrack to this thing so far also is phenomenal. I can't even imagine how much they paid in terms of the rights, the music rights, to get the music that they're using throughout this series. Just 6 episodes, and it just gets it's perfect. It's absolutely
You know what
perfect.
I think, though, on the music thing? Do you think, like, MJ was like, hey, man, I need this for like my, you know, and some of these artists were like, okay.
Oh, right. Right. Like, you get in touch with the, you know, surviving members of Tribe Called Quest. Hey, it's MJ here. Yep, we'll take it. Yeah, we don't need
any
money.
Use it. That's cool, yeah. Mike.
So I think that's great as well. So, yeah, looking forward to the next couple episodes tomorrow night.
Me too.
Glad you caught up. Hopefully you didn't miss any other episodes of 90 Day Fiancé, whatever it is you happen to be watching.
You watch that, not me. Don't try and project.
No, I know. And that David keep going to Ukraine trying to find that Lana. She doesn't exist. Back after this, Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Now this is funny. As we were just trashing those 90s Knicks teams, and rightfully so, off-brand Pistons. Ugh. Buddy of mine quickly DMing me, who's from that area and loved those Knicks teams, that New York City during the Riley years was a completely different world, unrecognizable to people. Riley had his teams reflect the city they played in. L.A. is Hollywood, thus the Showtime Lakers. New York City was the murder capital of the world during that era. It required a tough exterior to live here, and those 90s Knicks represented the city. Here's numbers to back it up. What a lunatic. The Pat Riley era, 5 years, 91 to 95. Total murders in New York City, 8,833. post-Pat Riley, Van Gundy era, 18 years, 02 to 19, total murders, 8,112. Oh, so that makes it right then.
Wow. Well, I add another murder to the list because Riley murdered basketball.
Right.
So there you go.
All right. The time remaining, we'll try to run through as many of your calls as we possibly can here. It's been Patriots heavy today, what with it being schedule day, oh, schedule day on Thursday night. And is it truly going to be Jarrett Stidham as the starting quarterback if and when 2020 NFL season starts? Tommy and Lynn on Jarrett Stidham.
Yes, guys. Jarrett Stidham, I think he's going to be the starter, and he's going to be the man that carry the team. Let's go Pats, and I'm a diehard Pats fan, and I love you guys' show.
Keep it thank up, you.
Guys.
Thanks,
appreciate
Tommy.
That.
Yeah, I believe in Stidham. Maybe it's a bit of brainwashing, you know, and it even started last year in the summertime when training camp opened up. Like, oh, we've never seen, hear from some of the beat writers, we've never seen a rookie quarterback throw this well and look this good this early. Stidham. And I was like, okay, what am I being fed here? And it's funny that it started last year because I think that they knew internally in terms of Bill Belichick, maybe ownership, like this is going to be Brady's last year. We're moving on. So what started as a sell job, I don't know, I'm now convinced on. I think it's Stidham. But you feel like the kid hasn't been pushed at all and he's just being anointed without really any
yeah,
kind of
I do.
Challenge.
Yeah, I do. I feel like, you know, they predetermined, preordained the ultimate outcome of this competition. And even if that means the first three or four games it's Hoyer, they've set it up so that ultimately it will be Stidham. And I would just like to see him have to earn the job and get pushed. And I would like to see them do what they do at every other position, which is make sure they have a quality insurance policy. Instead, I feel like in deference to Stidham, they want to make sure they have a veteran guy there who can protect him, but is not really good enough to beat him out in the long run. And I think that's on purpose.
Howard in Randolph on the, it says 2008 Patriots. Okay. Howard, hi.
How you doing, guys?
Good. What's up?
Great show as usual. I had a question. I don't know if you guys remember when Castle went 11-5. One game they lost at Gillette was against Favre and the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And Castle made a great play to tie the game up at regulation. And in overtime, they had the Jets on 3rd and 15, and they couldn't stop them, and they wound up getting the field goal to win the game. And that was the game that kept them out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I remember that game. It was he made that throw. I'm not taking anything away from Castle. I would say it was Randy Moss that made a great play on that one to catch that ball sort of leaning. It's interesting because we
that's
went
one,
back.
I think, didn't, it's a, I'm reminded of this. Chris Collinsworth called it before it happened, too, if I'm thinking of the right play.
Yeah, and Ty Law was with the Jets, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah.
He, like, came back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great game. That was one of the – actually, I probably wrote the best lead I've ever written to a game story off that game.
Oh, do tell.
I don't remember it exactly, but it was basically like the Patriots – I think it was like the Bill Belichick Patriots and the Eric Mangini Jets – finally played a game where the most gripping drama wasn't the post-game handshake.
Ah, very
probably
good.
The yes. best. Considering when you take into account the fact that it was a night game, it was like I was writing running and all that. It was like pretty. Adam Kilgore works for the Washington Post and is a far better writer than I will ever be. I remember the next day he was like, that was a great lead. And I was like, wow, Kilgore said that lead was great.
writing so, attaboys.
Yeah, exactly. But I went back through that schedule. Because we did this during one of the breaks, and they only beat three teams that year that had a winning record. One of them was Arizona, who ended up going to the Super Bowl, but just mailed it in once they saw the snow. The other one was the Jets. They beat the Jets in week two, and then they beat the Dolphins, who ended up winning the division.
Yeah.
They ended up playing the AFC West and the NFC West that year, and the Chargers won the AFC West at 8-8. So they had a really easy schedule that year.
Yeah, and so now this time around, tougher schedule, no Tom Brady, and I think people are underplaying the fact that the AFC East is better. Now, you can still look at the Jets and say they're coached by a moron and Adam Gase, who shouldn't have his job, and maybe you don't believe in Sam Darnold because he had a down year last year, but they have improved, and I believe in the Bills. I think their quarterback sucks, but overall, that's a good team. They're well-coached, really good defense. And so the Bills and Dolphins, to me, have a chance to win 9, possibly 10 games this year. And so you couple that with the Patriots' schedule and, you know, so many new faces, especially at the most important position. Like, I just think it's going to be – I think it's going to be a tough – I think it's going to be a tough go for them this year. And at best, Chris, maybe 9-7. I just
– Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, I know I sound all doom and gloom on Stidham and the quarterback thing, but I'm saying 9-7.
Let's go to Paul in Braintree on the Bill Parcells conversation. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how are you guys? How you doing?
Good. What's
good.
Up?
Listen, Bob Kraft doesn't buy this team if Orthwine doesn't hire Parcells. Parcells then drafts Drew Bledsoe over the golden boy from Notre Dame, Rick Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And he made this team from bad to good. And one thing I remember, the 93 season, they got beat by Pittsburgh by 3 points. They were 1-11. And Bill Cowher saying, this is the one-win team that nobody wants to play. And they went on to win the next four games. So what the young fans need to understand is these are the two parts. Parcells and Bledsoe are the two parts of the machine that we know now. They have to take credit for what we have at this point.
Oh, no doubt about it. And I don't think he's going to get in, Paul. You know, and this stemmed from the conversation that Patriots fans had an opportunity yesterday to vote for the next member of the Patriots Hall of Fame between Richard Seymour, Mike Vrabel, and Bill Parcells. And I've just seen and heard a fair amount of pettiness from large segments of the fan base, still angry at Bill Parcells. And they want to bring up the numbers that he finished here in 4 years and had a .500 record, and he only made the one Super Bowl and lost, and how he handled himself making the calls to the Jets time and time and time again during Super Bowl week. Like, it was unbecoming of him, and we're still mad and raw. But without him, who knows where the Patriots would be? You might be in St. Louis. You might still be irrelevant. And you wouldn't have Bill Belichick. You wouldn't. Without Bill Parcells, you don't have the Kraft's opportunity for them to be around him and learn what he's all about and say, no, that's who we want to be the next head coach post Pete Carroll. Like, none of that happens. So I think that he should be in the team Hall of Fame. He's a NFL Hall of Famer, but people still petty, people still angry. And the voting concluded yesterday, and apparently they're going to announce Monday morning at 10 a.m. Who is going to get in between Seymour, Parcells, and Mike Vrabel. Did you vote, Chris, or no? You abstained?
I did not vote. I'm not part of the nomination committee, and I didn't vote as a fan. I just didn't get around to it. So, you know, it's sort of par for the course for me in elections. I don't always get around to voting when I should.
He had fancy clothes to peruse on.
No. I mean, I have a different job now. I have to go into the studio every day.
That's right.
Actually, while you're talking, you know, sometimes I do this. I sort of zone out. I was just looking at the Stidham thing. Because Gus Malzahn, I can't remember whose story it was. I want to say it was Jeff Howes. I apologize if I'm giving the wrong person credit here. Was saying, like, oh, you know, he lost his two best receivers. No, he didn't. I just went back and looked at this Auburn thing. He lost the Will Hastings kid, who the Patriots have signed as an undrafted free agent, and he lost this Eli Stove guy. But his top receiver from the year before was a kid by the name of Ryan Davis. That kid played in 2018, and he actually had a pretty good year. So, I don't know. There's a lot of excuse making around this kid that bugs me a little bit. Like, I hope he can ultimately play, and I wouldn't be surprised if he could. But, man, I can't remember another player that's been with the Patriots that's organizationally gotten his tires pumped to this degree.
Yeah, I'm gonna write my lead right here. Chris Gasper thinks in new quarterback, Patriots, bit of a coddled puss. There you go. And with that, we'll wrap up with five questions for Chris Gasper that have nothing to do with sports next.
Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five! One, two, three, four, five!
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
All right, that's how we wrap up each and every week. Five questions for Chris Gasper, WCVB Channel 5. Check him out. Five questions got nothing to do with sports. All right, question number one there, Chris. VH1, it's come to my attention, is currently airing a marathon of Cheaters. Cheaters, show that dispatches the surveillance team to follow the partner suspected of cheating, gathering the incriminating video evidence with host Joey Greco, who was once stabbed. Were you a fan of Cheaters?
Big fan of Cheaters. All-time favorite episode, somebody tried to hide in a porta potty, and the aggrieved party tipped over the porta potty. And the person had to get out of the porta potty and actually, like, ran on foot to one of those, like, car washes, do-it-yourself car washes, and was rinsing themselves off, and Cheaters followed them in the van to see them rinsing themselves off and have the aggrieved party come out and attack them while they were rinsing themselves off. Great show.
How do I not know this? Because I, too, am a fan of this show and was back in the day, but that one I've never seen.
Oh, it's the best one.
What a hell. Oh, my God. Being trapped in a porta potty and someone knocks it over and then you're covered in...
Yep. And then had to run on foot to a car wash.
Oh, my God.
And they're still chasing them.
We tried to do that. This is going back about 20 years to my friend Jeff Holt when we were going to Patriots games all the time. We're all hammered. He was in a porta potty. We tried to knock it over in one of the parking lots while tailgating, and he got out just in time.
Oh, you guys are terrible human beings.
Worst friends in America.
Oh, that's the worst.
Question number two.
That should be a crime.
Oh, really? I mean, that's awful. What a horrible thing to try to do to someone. Oh, my God. So we're in this quarantine hell, lockdown, the new normal, all that. How will you celebrate your mom on Mother's Day tomorrow?
You know, I've been trying to give that some thought. I don't know. I was thinking I might, drive by the house and maybe just stand outside the glass. I mean, my parents are old. You know, they're older. They're baby boomers. They're in their 70s. So I don't want to risk contaminating them in any way. That's honestly been the toughest part of this for me, is not being able to go over there, because I normally go over there fairly frequently and have dinner with them and stuff. And really, since it started, I haven't gone over there once out of fear of contaminating them in some way. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, even for the toughest dude, there's something so reassuring and comforting when it comes to a hug from mom. You can't really do that right now, especially if she's older and in bad health.
That's tough.
So what do? You pull up, you roll down the window. Hey, Ma! Happy Mother's Day! You throw the flowers and drive off.
That's a tough one, yeah.
A terrible time we live in.
Yeah.
Question number three. You freaked out about the beef shortage.
No, actually, you know what? I've been buying these Beyond Meat burgers. I like them. I cook them. I think it's a good excuse for more plant-based meat. I'm good. Yeah. and I like bison steak, and I haven't had a hard, knock on wood, I haven't had a hard time finding that either. Leaner cut of meat.
Yeah.
It's been good.
I guess I shouldn't be, because I don't eat it a ton, but it does kind of freak me out. And I've heard from friends in the restaurant industry that in 2 weeks, watch out.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So stock up. And I hate doing this.
Don't warn. Now, wait, hold on. Stock up. I have to go to the supermarket today. So start stocking up Monday, people. Monday is really when you should start stocking up.
I get mad generally at the news being like, they're playing into like, go out, get the toilet paper, get the food. But I've heard from restaurant sources, get that beef now and freeze it, because a couple of weeks from now, oh, boy.
Really? Same restaurant that gives you a beer that's not on the menu?
No. It's others. People that work like in barbecue who like their life is meats.
Yeah.
And they said it's going to be problematic. Question number four. How long before you fly on an airplane again that you feel safe flying on an airplane?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I've been thinking about it. I talked to the wife. I'd like to go somewhere this summer, like maybe one of these places that's opened up, like Nashville or Savannah. And, Sweden seems to be handling it pretty well. And we normally go to Europe in the summer. So, my European vacation every summer. So I would like to be able to do that. This would break a streak. So I'm hoping we can go somewhere.
I think that there probably isn't a more sanitized place on the planet right now than airplanes. Maybe I'm fooling myself, but the way that they talk about it and you read about it, they're sanitized. They're taking precautions. Nobody else on the plane. Fred Tucker and his family just flew out yesterday to go down to his folks in Tennessee. If I had somewhere to go tonight, I'm getting on a plane. I'm doing it. If you had restaurants open tonight, I'm going.
I'm just kind of surprised you haven't already gone to one of these places that's opening up, and I figured you'd be on the first plane out to Austin, Texas, or Nashville.
I've thought about it. I'm starting to crack. I'm ready to flee. Finally, drive-in concerts reportedly may be a thing for a while because of the corona hell. Would you be up for a drive-in concert?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, I'm not a big concert goer to begin with, but yeah, I could, Casey Musgraves, drive-up concert, I'm there.
You got to have a-holes still drinking, honking on their horns. Encore!
No, it's going to be, play it right!
That's me going to the police show in my car. That's not how it sounds. Don't play a jazzy sting. You suck. Boo.
The bigger question is, how do the performers feel? Because if someone doesn't like are they going to start flashing their high beams on the stage?
Right. Yeah. No,
how's that going to work?
I don't see how that could work. All right, thus concludes five questions for Chris Gass. We got nothing to do with sports. Chris, always a pleasure.
Same here, Jim. Best part of my week.
Check him out, Channel 5, tomorrow night in all times on WCVB. Read his articles there as well. For Brian Robb, B-Robb, Boston Sports Journal. Read his stuff, bostonsportsjournal.com. Producing the show, and that will do it for me. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Maz. Coming up next, the Bruins versus Canadiens rivalry special here on 98.5 Sports Hub. Enjoy that. Talk to you Monday. Bye.
From the Town Fair Tire Studios, Boston's home for sports.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Hey, it's Maz. Are you tired of small inconveniences that always turn into big headaches at home? Well, my friends at Roadnizer Home Services can make small fixes like repairing leaky faucets, adding or replacing electrical outlets and lights, or clearing slow drains that will provide big comfort for your home. And with over 10,000 five-star reviews, Roadnizer's expert technicians are just a call away and ready to fix those inconveniences at your home. Experience the difference with Roadnizer Home Services. Visit Roadnizer.com to schedule today. That's Roadnizer Home Services. Nice people. People, great service since 1928.